Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome again to another episode on Talk Architecture, and I'm your host, Naziati Muhammad Yaqub, with a topic that reflects this article in Medium, Designing and Leading While Neurodivergent. The reason why I come across this article is because I'm trying to understand that in the field of architecture and design, all sorts of design, there are a group of people. And are these people the majority? Meaning that are the majority of designers and architects neurodivergent? Now, of course, this is controversial because everyone feels that they are normal and that is normally what it is that architects do, you know, being very focused in their work and kind of intense and kind of really get into the job and concentrating for long periods of time, which is something that people in psychiatry think that you might be in the spectrum. Autism, a spectrum disorder, or in, you know, well, it's may not be a disorder per se, because it is such a huge spectrum, as I understand it, finding out more, that, maybe there are some characteristics that is something that is a good thing in terms of the creative fields in which you thrive on. But some things where you have to deal with other people, which is the problem later on, where you have to deal with the office environment, the office politics, or having to interact with other people and deal with emotions, that may be of something that you don't really like when you're in the creative profession. And sometimes people opt out of that environment to go into a much more self-employed situation. So what I'm trying to get at is that, is there something in, I want to say specifically architecture, that could suggest so? Okay, before I go any further, I'd like to read a bit more on part of this article in Medium by Julian Scaff, S-C-A-F-F, on January 20th, 2024. The title is called Designing and Leading While Neurodivergent. Now, Julian set off to say this, that in his early 40s, he began to learn about people on the autism spectrum, and many similarities in his own behavioral patterns struck him. Sorry, I should say day, right? These include difficulties communicating and interacting with others, reading others' emotion, making eye contact, relying on routines and repetitive motions, i.e. tapping, fidgeting, obsessive hand washing, etc. A few years ago, they were formally diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, ASD, a revelation that had brought them much comfort and clarity. Discovering more about ASD has been like finding the instruction manual for their brain's operating system for the first time. Now, I'm going to get to the point in a couple of paragraphs, because this is something that is pertinent to architecture that I take for granted myself. So I'm going to read the next paragraph so that we can see the context of where this is going. I have also discovered, they have also discovered, that many creative people are neurodivergent. Because while neurodivergence creates challenges, it also unlocks special abilities. Hey, yeah, in architecture, we have a lot of special abilities. They learned to read at a very young age, memorize and learn visual information very quickly. They see patterns in data, particularly large and complex sets of qualitative data. And they are able to focus intensely for long periods of time. These are some of the strengths and abilities typical of people on the autism spectrum. So some of their weird abilities and proclivities, while they struggle to understand spreadsheets and email gives them anxiety, they can easily pick up on behavioral patterns in large sets of qualitative ethnographic data and mixed qualitative and quantitative data sets. Well, I did that for my PhD myself. Anyway, let's go on to the next one. They can study the map of a large airport or shopping mall for a few seconds and then remember it nearly perfectly to navigate where they are going and give strangers directions. Okay, I thought that this is to do with us studying architecture and needing to be able to do that. I seriously think that this is a characteristic or a quality that everyone in architecture should have. Now this makes sense. This really makes sense to me now that many people not able to do this. Just because you studied architecture doesn't mean you're neurodivergent or that you can pick up the skill. Is this a specific skill? We never actually studied these things. That this is possibly some sort of special skill that neurodivergence can pick up. Now, there is another thing that Scaff said here in this paragraph. They can quickly look at a two-dimensional drawing and imagine the three-dimensional equivalent in their head. I'm just blurting out expletives right now because, for goodness sake, isn't this what students of architecture should be doing? I think that we were trained to be special. I mean, the ones that are doing things manually, that they can actually see things three-dimensionally from two-dimensional drawings. But I have had this problem with my students where they can't. And this is almost everybody can't do this. And I'm thinking loudly right now. That's why people fall back to digital drawings. I mean, we were learning how to, I mean, okay, can we say that those who did not draw with computational drawings or digital tools had a special ability similar to people who could be neurodivergent? I mean, we could learn to do that. I mean, so what if we are neurodivergent? Isn't that a good thing? So I'm starting to think that neurodivergency in creative fields is more common than what we think or what we believe. Seriously. And I'm starting to think all these things because not that I don't want to be neurodivergent. What if I am neurodivergent? Fine. But since I was in my 20s, I've always been able to look at two-dimensional drawings and imagine the three-dimensional equivalent in my head. Now, I had a chat with somebody who is autistic and diagnosed as such. And they mentioned about visual information. They see things visually. Now, I just go wash over me and okay, yeah, but that person is a film producer who studied architecture before but decided to do fashion and became a film producer or director. Now, if I was, I mean, I end up being a film producer or director, I would have to visualize a lot. And it's not difficult for me to do so. And there are many architects who become film producers. Well, many in the sense that fashion designers, yes. Film producers, I mean, there are quite a number. And architects always appreciate the fine arts or the visual arts. And we had workshops, we had student jamborees, and we had a lot of performances. So we take it for granted that we are flexible, adaptable in a lot of the arts because we're the mother of all arts, architecture is. But is it now, you know, when we're reliant on digital tools? And the fact is that computer become create that digital tool for the architecture student and the architects nowadays. We don't rely so much on us imagining it. So it's just kind of lost this quality, which somehow subsumed by all this debate between digital and manual that I have even discussed before in this podcast in the last few years. Okay, I want to stop it there, reading this article because I think that it's worthwhile for people to read this article and make it what they think it is. But I am actually stuck at that sentence where looking at a two-dimensional drawing and imagine the three-dimensional equivalent in their head, which is, I take it for granted. I take for granted that skill. And I thought that was the skill that all architecture students should have. But I am wrong. I suddenly have to put my hands up in the air and start thinking, do my peers at my age also can do this? I suspect many can do this, but then there are others who can't. And how did they get along? So I see they became more of the, shall we say, project manager type, construction management type. The architectural practice, more of practice type. They're not so much the designer type, maybe. And I guess in when thinking back in the 80s and the 90s, when I was doing some architectural practice, I thought back about the time when I was it was in my 30s, when I came back from a stint in an academia, and I wanted to go back to practice, and I had like some months before I go again to do my master's, and I was in this architecture company, and I just did a lot of detail drawings to the extent that I had repetitive hand injury or something, and there was a lot of swollenness, and I had to take a break from doing all those detailed design, but I could do those detailed design like nonstop. I was just pouring out my, and you know, detailed design is three-dimensional. It's 3D details. Now, I'm sure there are people out there who resonate with me on this issue, or think or resonate with this skill set that you all have. I'm sure you suddenly think, oh my God, you know, I don't want you to panic and think that you're neurodivergent and you go to see a doctor and find out it's just not that simple, you know, to come to the conclusion that you're neurodivergent because you can do this. But there are things that happen, and while you're reading and while you're thinking and reflecting, that seems to be asking more questions of you. So anyway, it's worthwhile to read this. And that's all I want to say really in this 15 minutes quick thoughtful reflection on not taking for granted some skills that we have, especially if you had to do manual drawings before, or maybe you sketch stuff and you do product design or you do other design, even produce films. I got fascinated about this call sheet that film producers produce, and all the information that you can get in one sheet. I get excited about that, and I guess when we discover things, we want to sort of identify ourselves as a certain type of architect or a certain type of designer. And that's very important to me, I think. And I hope that you realize that you're special in a sense that you have all these things that you discover about yourself, which is other people don't really think much about. And I really take pride in being able to look at two-dimensional drawings and imagine the three-dimensional equivalent in my head. I mean, I love doing that. It's like something that is like, it's like drinking water when you're thirsty. And here I go out to you. You're out there, heartfelt, sort of connection. If you're having a similar thing like mine, you know, like what I'm thinking about, hey, isn't that beautiful that we can do that? Thank you for listening. Take care.